Well, how many of you are still exhausted from Vacation Bible School? See, look at all those honest hands out there. How many of you are now saying, I am never doing that again? And how many of you know next year you're going to do it again? Yeah, see, there we go. Well, it has been a good week, and I do want to remind you, if you do have kids that need to head out to an extended session, they're headed out right now, and you can just meet the ladies right over here. We'll take them in there. But a couple of things. We are going to be in Genesis chapter 45 again today. And I want to ask you this while you're turning there to Genesis 45. Has anybody ever acted in a way that you were kind of surprised by that? I don't know if that was me or what that was. So has anybody ever acted in a way that you kind of went, okay, I wasn't expecting that response right there? You know, we see that from time to time, right? Now, as we've gone along through this series through Joseph, talking about this is the pits, and we look at his journey, I think this is really a lot of people have loved this series. And I think the reason why is because this series just so much captures what the human experience is like. When we started this whole thing off, our second week, we talked about this and what that does in you. There, we talked about temptation and how we deal with that, and we talked about what it feels like to feel like when you're invisible and forgotten. We looked at Joseph as he stayed faithful even in the midst of everything that was going on. We've talked about what it is that really defines who you are. How do you define yourself? We've talked about what happens when we are just filled full of guilt and our conscience just seems to never let us go. We talked about what happens when we let fear and distrust guide our actions. When we hit the thing just 3 weeks ago, when we hit the climax of the story when he reveals himself to his brothers, and we talked about hope. We actually spent 2 weeks talking about hope and what that does and how important that is. And today we're going to kind of shift gears a little bit. For just a minute to start off here, we're going to take the emphasis off of Joseph, and we're going to look at another guy. We're going to look at Pharaoh. Now, I want to set the stage here for a minute, okay? Now, remember that Pharaoh, that Joseph and Pharaoh, hang on real quick, y'all. All right, we're going to see if that fixes our little problem here. Let's set the stage here. 9 years ago, this guy waltzes into Pharaoh's life, a guy named Joseph. Pharaoh had had these disturbing dreams, and he didn't know what they meant. And so he started asking around, what do these dreams mean? And one of his servants, one of his attendants there, the cupbearer, said, I know a guy, he could interpret those dreams. And so he calls this guy from prison, calls him from jail, who tells him there's going to be 7 years of great years, great harvest. You're going to have 7 of the most abundant years ever, but it's going to be followed by 7 years of drought, 7 years of the worst years ever. That was 9 years ago. Now, Joseph, he gets put in charge by Pharaoh because Pharaoh was kind of in that conversation 9 years ago. He's like, well, that's not good news. And Joseph goes, here's what you need to do. You need to set up this thing for when you have 7 years, you need to save as much of that. You need to build these storehouses. You need to save up because then you can survive the 7 bad years. And Pharaoh goes, that's a great idea. You're in charge. And Joseph's like, what? That was 9 years ago. Now, as we saw the last couple of weeks, we took a little break from it last week, but as we looked at the 2 weeks before that, Joseph's family has now come after 22 years. The very brothers that sold him into slavery lied to their dad about it. Now, 22 years later, they show up, and now they are here. Now, if you're Pharaoh here for a minute, keep in mind how much trust and importance you have put on Joseph. This is the guy that you've put in charge of the entire nation, the guy that's in charge of making sure that there's food over these 7 bad years. And now, how far along into those 7 years are we? 2. Which means there's still how many more to go? Good math skills, y'all. Good job. So here's the thing. Now, all of a sudden, if you hear that your family from the other country way back there has come, if you're Pharaoh, how are you going to respond? How are you going to respond if you're Pharaoh? Now, if you were me, I think I'd be a little threatened by that, maybe. I mean, you'd feel threatened by that. You'd be like, okay, you know, I need you here, and I need you fully engaged here. I need you not thinking about anything else. I need you focused on saving lives here, that this needs to be your emphasis here. Now, after 22 years, he's 39 years old, and after 22 years, he's seeing his brothers again, and Pharaoh hears about it. Let's see what happens here. So I want to start reading in verse 1. Not verse 1. I want to go down to verse 16, which is where we're at. When the news reached Pharaoh's palace, Joseph's brothers have come. Pharaoh and his servants were pleased. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Tell your brothers, do this, load your animals and go on back to the land of Canaan. Get your father and your families and come back to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you can eat from the richness of the land." You're also commanded to tell them, "Do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt for your dependents and your wives and bring your father here. Do not be concerned about your belongings, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." The sons of Israel did this. Joseph gave them wagons as Pharaoh had commanded, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave each of the brothers changes of clothes, and he gave Benjamin 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothes. Then he sent his father the following: 10 donkeys carrying the best products of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys carrying grain, food, and provisions for his father on the journey. So Joseph sent his brothers on their way, and as they were leaving, he said to them, "Don't argue on the way." All right, now this is kind of an interesting response here from it. We saw the last time that we met that Joseph had told his brothers, he goes, "Go get dad and bring him back here. Come back here. You guys need to come back here. There's 5 more years of famine. There's 5 more years of hardship that's going to be going on. Come here and I can save you. Come here and you'll be okay." That's a pretty good response, right, that Joseph does. But did you catch Pharaoh's response? Pharaoh's response was even more impressive. Look here, he said, look this. He said, "Tell your brothers, load your animals, go on back to the land of Canaan. Get your father, get your families, and come back to me." He says, "I want you to go get everybody and bring them here." He says, "I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you can eat from the richness of the land." Did you kind of catch all that? He goes, "Come here, you'll have the greatest things that we have," in the middle of 7 years of famine. Not only that, but look at what he does. He says, "Take wagons. You've got little ones. You've got your wives. You've got your dad who's getting up there in age. Why don't you go get some wagons? Take wagons for all of them and bring them here." And he says, "Don't worry about anything." He says, "Just come back here." This is not the response I would have expected out of Pharaoh. I mean, honestly, this is not the response. I would have expected him to go, "You know, your brothers, the guys that sold you into slavery, no, you don't need them. You need me and all this here." Isn't that how most of us would be tempted to respond? You know? But not Pharaoh. That's not what he does at all. When I was thinking about all this and I was praying about how to present all of this, the word that kept coming back to me was the word integrity. The word integrity, because I kind of catch this picture here for a minute. Integrity actually means, one of the ways I looked up the definition of integrity, and here's one of the things that I found, and I kind of liked it. It says, having integrity means doing the right thing in a reliable way. Think about that for a minute. Integrity is doing the right thing in a reliable way. It goes on and says, it's a personality trait that we admire, since it means a person has a moral compass that doesn't waver. It literally means having wholeness of character, just as an integer is a whole number with no fractions. Physical objects can display integrity too. If you're going over a rickety old bridge that sways in the wind, you might question its structural integrity. Did you kind of catch this whole thing? Integrity is doing the right thing in a reliable way. This is very much what I think Pharaoh is doing without even realizing he's doing it here for a minute. He's doing the right thing sometimes even when you don't want to. Isn't that what integrity is? As we looked at in the last couple of weeks, we see that Joseph, when he reveals himself to his brother, that he sends everybody else out. So it's just him and his brothers when he tells them, "Hey, here's who I am. I'm your brother. I'm alive." But he is crying so loudly that everyone, not just in his house, but Pharaoh's house, hears about it. And so word's gotten back to Pharaoh. Of course word's going to get back to Pharaoh. You know, people are going up to Joseph going, "Joseph, man, are you all right?" You know, you ever have one of those big crying sessions? You ever cry in public? And then everyone else is coming up to you going, "Are you okay?" You know, time after time of that, "Are you all right? Do you need a hug?" You know, people kind of do that. Joseph had just lost it in front of everybody. And of course, that's going to get people talking. People start going, "Joseph, why are you upset? Oh, wait, those are his brothers?" And then they start going, "Oh, I could see some family resemblance there." And then they go and they tell someone, "Hey, did you hear that Joseph's brothers are here? That group of 11 guys over there, that's Joseph's brothers." And word keeps going and going and going until it gets to Pharaoh. And of course, Pharaoh is going to hear about it. And I love that Pharaoh responds, because it just becomes this incredible little heartfelt moment that he has, isn't it? Isn't this just pretty amazing? He goes, I want you to go get your family, and I want you to bring them back here. Now, here's the question for me. I think Pharaoh, he's responding in utmost integrity here. And you want to know why? Because I think he learned it. Do you want to know why I think he learned that? We looked at this verse just a couple of weeks ago. I want to put it up here on the screen. Verse 8 of Genesis 45. I want you to see what Joseph said to his brothers. He said this, therefore it was not you who sent me here, but God. And then notice this next little phrase that he said. He says, the God has made me what? A father to Pharaoh. What does that entail? Okay, I want you to think this through for a minute. What does that mean? That means that they've really gotten to know each other. That means that they've kind of built this relationship. It means that Pharaoh looks up to Joseph as like a father figure to him. These guys over the last 9 years have gotten close. These guys over the last 9 years have just spent so much time together. And Pharaoh has just come to love Joseph like a dad. Isn't that a beautiful picture? You know? And notice he says here that he's made me a father to Pharaoh. As a result of that, Joseph has become lord over his entire household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. And it all happens because Joseph is a model of integrity that Pharaoh learns from. Isn't that kind of an interesting thing here? Do you know why Joseph says, I've become like a father to Pharaoh? As he goes, Pharaoh's beginning to act a little more like me. He's beginning, I've been like a father to him. I've been the guy that's right there giving him advice. I've been that guy that he goes to when he doesn't know what to do. I've been that guy. And you know what Pharaoh has learned? How to live a life of integrity over these last 9 years of being with Joseph. It's pretty amazing, honestly. I mean, it's pretty incredible to think about. I think that it's important that we realize that integrity is contagious, that integrity can be learned from watching someone else. And I love this fact that if you look at Joseph here for a minute, if you look at his life, stick with me here. This is something some of you are going to go, wait, that doesn't make any sense. He's 17 years old. I don't know what's going on there. He is 17 years old when he's first sold into slavery by his brothers, right? Then he gets bounced around from place to place with no say in where he goes. It's almost like Joseph's like a foster kid in a way. Do you kind of picture that? Going from place to place, not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing what's going to go on here. And what's funny is I love the fact that Pharaoh has seen something in Joseph, and he begins to see Joseph kind of like a dad. So what does that mean that Joseph is to Pharaoh? Family, right? And when he hears that there's other family, he goes, hey, man, my family has just grown. You need to bring him here. I need to meet him. I need to meet Joseph's dad. I need to meet all this. And Pharaoh has just got this excitement that I think is really pretty cool. It's really pretty great to think that's what's happening here. But the truth is that I want you to see something here about integrity, because integrity and wisdom are going to go hand in hand. You see this all throughout the scriptures. I want us to look at a couple of verses here for a minute. Let's look at this first one out of Psalms. It's Psalm 51, verse 6. Psalm 51 is when David has been confronted with his own sin. He's been confronted about what he did with Bathsheba and the murder of Bathsheba's husband. And Nathan the prophet has come to him and he says, hey, you have messed up bad. And here's what David says when he deals with his own sin. As he says this to God, he says, surely you desire integrity in the inner self, and you teach me wisdom deep within. You kind of catch this picture here? David that had messed up so bad, and he's pouring out his heart to God, and he goes, God, you desire integrity in the inner self, and I don't have that. He says, you teach me wisdom, but it happens once we have integrity. Now, we could look at other verses. I want to look at one other here in Proverbs chapter 2. This is what it says in verses 6 through 12 here. It says, for the Lord gives wisdom. All right, did you kind of catch that word? The Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up success for the upright. He is a shield for those who live with what? So let me repeat that again. He is a shield for those that live with integrity, so that he may guard the paths of justice and protect the way of his faithful followers. Then you will understand righteousness, justice, and integrity, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will delight you. Discretion will watch over you and understanding will guard you. It will rescue you from the way of evil. I'm going to switch to a handheld here for a minute. Which one do you want me to use, Chad? Okay. Since this one now has batteries in it and that one doesn't, we'll switch to this one. Do you catch this picture, though, of what integrity does? Integrity, it's notice here this combination of wisdom. That from the mouth, for the Lord gives wisdom, and from God's mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And notice here that God is a shield for those who live with integrity. And once you go down, it says that once you start living in integrity, he's going to guard the paths of justice. He's going to protect the way of his faithful followers. Then you understand righteousness, you understand justice, you understand integrity. And I love the way that Proverbs describes those as what? Every good path. Now, we've seen here that Pharaoh is beginning to act in that. He's beginning to follow those good paths. And one other verse I want to look at is in Psalm 84 here. I want to go back to that, back to Psalms. I love what chapter 84, verses 10 through 12 says. I can get my mouth working here. Look at this. It says, better is a day in your courts than 1,000 anywhere else. I love that fact. He goes, I would rather be on trial in the courts of God than just living it up anywhere else. Better is a day in your courts than 1,000 anywhere else. I would rather stand at the threshold of the house of my God than live in the tents of wicked people. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord grants favor and honor. And then notice this, he does not withhold the good from those who live with integrity. Happy is the person who trusts in you, Lord of armies. And I think that we've had this interesting picture of Pharaoh responding in a really cool way, doing the right thing in the right way. That's kind of what integrity is. But notice here that Joseph, we're going to go on here for a minute, because we're going to get to see Joseph's integrity in action too. Because I want us to look at what happens here, verses 21 through 23. Let's put that up there and let's read those here. Joseph gives his brothers wagons, as Pharaoh had commanded, and he gives them provisions for the journey. He gave each of the brothers changes of clothes, but he gave Benjamin 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothes. He sent his father the following: 10 donkeys carrying the best products of Egypt and 10 female donkeys carrying grain, food, and provisions for his father on the journey. And I kind of like this picture here because you're going to see Joseph responding in integrity too. You get to see what integrity in action kind of looks like here. Now, if you were Joseph and all of a sudden after 22 years your brothers come, how many of you would be tempted to just egg them on a little bit, poke them a little bit? You jerks. Brothers never have issues with fighting at all, No. And even when you're 39 years old, you don't have the desire to egg on your brother at all. No, not a bit. But there's some pretty pictures, I think, of what happens here. Notice the first thing that he gave them in verse 22 there. He said he gave them changes of clothes. Don't miss the irony here for a minute. Do you remember the last time that he had seen them 22 years ago? Do you remember what they did? They took his coat, this coat that they were envious of because it represented how much dad loved him. They take this coat and they rip it off of him, and they take his clothes and they start ripping it and they tear it up and they pour goat's blood on it. The very brothers that had taken his clothes from him, Joseph gives them clothes for their journey. Do they really need those clothes? They really don't. I mean, they're wearing clothes. It's Joseph just trying to take care of them, trying to give them the provisions, trying to give them what they need. The very brothers that had stripped him of his clothes, he gives them clothes. And I can't get past how much irony that is there. He gives Benjamin 300 pieces of silver, and he gives them 5 sets of clothing. Then they load up the donkeys with the best products of Egypt. Because here's the thing that I want you to see from it. Just because they've reconciled, just because the brothers have made up, doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to be good from here on out. Joseph is making steps here to let him know, hey, we're part of each other's lives. He is doing something. It's not just enough to reconcile, but that reconciliation is followed up with the actions that he's doing here. He is strengthening that reconciliation. Do you kind of catch that picture here from it? It's not just enough to say, okay, it's all forgiven. He's proving that it's forgiven through what he does. That's integrity in action. There's a couple of verses I want to look at that that I think are just such a huge thing here for a minute. Look at what Jesus says in Mark chapter 10, verses 43 and 44. This is what Jesus said. He said, whoever wants to become great among you will be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you will be a slave to all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Let's look at it. Something else Jesus said in John chapter 13. I want you to see this. He says this. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash another's feet. You know, this is the night that Jesus is going to be arrested. It's the night right at the start of the Last Supper, and he starts off by washing their feet, a job that a servant would do. One other passage I want us to see here as well is this one right here. Let's put it, there we go. Galatians 6, verses 9 and 10. Because I love this. It says, "Don't let us not get tired of doing good." Let's be honest. How many of you have reached those moments where you go, I'm tired of doing the right thing? Some of you are laughing, and some of you are just lying, going, I'm not going to admit that. We're in church. But you know what doing the right thing is? Integrity. Even when you're tired of it. Even when you're begging your wife, I don't care if it's day 5 of VBS, I don't want to go. And she goes, you're going to go. Because it's the right thing to do, right? Let's not get tired of doing good, for we will reap at the proper time if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us work for the good of all, especially for those who belong to the household of faith. Let's go on back to that for a minute. All right. Especially, don't give up on doing good. And I love this. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us work for the good of all. You know who ought to be leading the way in doing good works? Christians. And we are. And I love that. You know, the first people on the field as soon as there's a disaster somewhere, it's Christians. You know who leads the way in feeding those that are hungry all over the world? It's Christians. Christians ought to be the ones that are fighting for what's right, even if it's not popular. Christians ought to be the one who's fighting for what's good, even when people aren't going to like what we're doing, even when it makes us uncomfortable. You guys want to know why we go and pack lunches once a month and take them to low-income housing? Because it's the right thing to do. We want people to know that they're loved. We want people to know that they're not forgotten. You know why in 5 weeks we're going to load up and go down and do disaster relief at Port Arthur? Because it's the right thing to do. And some of you guys, I'm telling you right now, God's been working on your heart about that trip, and you've been fighting him. You're going, I'm not going to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go, God. And God's going, you need to go because it's the right thing to do. Do not get tired of doing good, for we will reap at the proper time if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us work for the good of all. What do you need to do that would be considered a good work for somebody this week? Can you think of something that you need to do? Because I promise you, God has something good for you to do for someone this week. Search for it and look for it, because I promise you it's there. That's called living in integrity. That's what that looks like. But I think that there's what I think is, we're gonna go on here with the passage, because I think one of the most funniest moments in all of Scripture happens in the very next verse. Verse 24, so Joseph sent his brothers on the way, and as they were leaving, he said to them, don't argue on the way. You guys catch how great that is? You catch how funny that is? You know, if you have 11 brothers together on a journey, traveling on donkeys that are lowered down with grain. Now there's 20 other donkeys. The brothers' donkeys are already there. They're loaded down with grain and things like that. Now you've got all the other 20 donkeys that are there, and they're loaded down with the best of the good of Egypt. You can imagine that trip would take a little while to go 250 to 300 miles, which is roughly the journey they have to take. You ever seen 11 brothers together for that long? And not only that, but what do you think that they might be arguing about on the way? What have they just learned? Who this guy is that's the head of all of Egypt? Who is this guy? Oh, he's our brother, the guy we sold into slavery. Don't you think that there might be a chance for some accusations going along the way? Going, well, it was your idea to throw him in the pit. Someone else going, well, you were the one that was always so jealous of him. Someone else is going, no, I was the one trying to say don't do it. And they're like, no, you were. You were right there. You know, could you imagine the arguments that would kind of be going along here? Because brothers are going to fight. It's what they do. They're going to argue. It's what they do. I've got a twin brother, and he is uh,
He's an idiot.
He's really not. But, you know, he is my brother, so I have to say that, you know. And brothers are going to fight. It's going to happen. My brother, you know, he's my twin brother, so he's been my brother my whole life. And he's something else. I would try and think of how to describe him, but I don't want to embarrass my wife and, you know, and, yeah, all that kind of stuff to know what she married into. Now, when I was a teenager, I want to tell you a little story about my brother. When I was a teenager, I was learning how to ski. I had gone on this church trip to go to learn how to ski. Anybody ever snow ski in here? Not water ski, snow ski. Okay, there's a few hands there. You know, one of the hardest things to learn for me ever was skiing. Yeah. For those of you that have never been skiing, you're going to get your first lesson right here. Now, they taught me, there was a guy named Dave that they hooked me up with, Dave, and Dave was going to spend the first part of this first morning teaching me how to ski. All right, so Dave, they hooked me up with Dave, and I mean, he's this kind of muscular, tall, intimidating type of guy, you know. So I told the story to the MOPS group a couple of years ago, and I've never shared it here, so I'm going to share it here. But Dave was he said, the first thing we're going to do is teach you how to get up, and he shoves me over. Literally, now I'm like a turtle on its back laying there trying to get up, you know, and he's like, get up! You pushed me over. You know, so I kind of wiggle around. I'm finally able to get, you know, you're wearing those skis that were like really long, and you're trying to get your feet underneath you, and you've got those poles, and it's just like extra limbs flying everywhere. It's just one of the most difficult things ever. So I finally get myself up, and you know what Dave does? Pushes me back down again. That's right. Yeah. Pushes me back down. So after, you know, an hour of me wanting to strangle Dave, but I couldn't reach him because I'm flopping around on the ground, you know, like an idiot there, I finally learned, okay, it's, you know, you're supposed to be teaching me to ski, not how to get up. So Dave starts to teach me how to ski. So he taught me this move, okay? Those of you that have ever been skiing, you remember the first move you were ever taught? Snowplow! Who said snowplow? Cynthia's been skiing. You know what the snowplow looks like? It's the first thing that they teach everybody when they first learn to ski. It's that right there. You kind of bend your knees together. You kind of, you know, tip your make like a V with your skis, and you kind of put your weight on the inside because it slowly brings you to a stop. Right? The snowplow. There's no way to look cool while doing a snowplow. You know, you're doing. So he's teaching me to snowplow, and that's about all I had learned. And then that afternoon he goes, well, I'm going to go have fun, so bye. And now I'm going, wait, what? Now I have to. And I was being taught with my brother. There were a couple other people that were being taught too, and I think he was learning with another guy. So I'm learning, you know, I've learned two things, how to stand up and how to snowplow. That's it. You know, the snowplow is designed to be nice and slow and keep you from gaining too much speed and hurting yourself and things like that. Now, you know, so there's a, now with skiing, there's three different levels of ski slopes, right? The first is a green, what is it, a square? Oh, circle. I said squirrel and I made a circle. That's how well my brain's working this morning. It's a little green circle, okay? That means, you know, it's going to be pretty flat, not much of a slope to it. You're going to have to do a lot of poling. You're not going to get up a whole lot of speed. Then there's a blue square. Blue square is a little more slope to it. You know, you can fall and get hurt type of thing. The black ones are the diamonds. You know, a black diamond means that you're going to meet Jesus face to face is what that means. Now, I quickly learned this whole little technique that if I was on a, even on the green slopes, this is what I'd do. You know, you're wearing that ski jacket and all those clothes and things like that. So I quickly learned when you fall, if you roll over on your back and stick your arms and legs straight up in the air, you gain like a whole other 10, 15 feet of space, you know, that you can kind of do all that. You know, some of you are going, that's a genius idea. I never thought of that. So it's near the end of the day, and I am done with skiing. I don't want anything to do with skiing. I'm like, Mom, forget this. And a guy named Jason Hudson, a friend, he sees my brother and I, and he goes, hey, let's go do a slope. Let's come on. And we're going, no. Oh. He goes, come on, it'll be fun. And so we decided to go on the ski slope. Now, the trickiest part of all of skiing is something called the chairlift. I don't care how experienced of a skier you are, the chairlift is going to stress you out. For those of you that have never been skiing, there's this little, you know, there's this little motorized chairs that go around, and the way that those work is, you know, I mean, it looks kind of like this, and it's coming along, and, you know, it hits you right in the knees, and you sit down. The next thing you know, you're 50 feet off of the ground, literally, in this chair that's just swinging back and forth. Usually there's a, you know, sometimes it makes like a little, it'll have like connectors on the ends of it that goes up and connects into this cable. You know, sometimes there's a bar in between two chairs. You know, some of you are kind of, you've been skiing, you kind of know that. I quickly learned that on a chairlift when I'm 50 feet off the ground and scared out of my mind to wrap myself around that pole and go, you know, this is my pole. You end up with complete strangers on one of those that has a pole right here in the middle, you know, and you're like wrapped around going, hey, how you doing? Don't touch this or I'll beat you up, you know, because this is my pole. Save my life. So that day, Jason Hudson takes my brother and I, and he decides that we need to go up this hill, and it was a three-person chairlift. Now, the toughest part of any skiing is the chairlift, because you've got to get, you know, what happens is the chair in front of you goes on by, and then you've got to pull and get up there real quick and try and get up as much speed as you can for the chair to come hit you. Then you're going to be 50 feet off the ground for like 10 minutes, you know, while people are skiing underneath you, and that's terrifying in and of itself. And then you have the steepest slope on the entire mountain coming off of the chairlift, because they make it steep so that you get a lot of speed and you can get out of the way. And so the next people behind you won't be there either, right? Are you with me on all that? So, and I swear they ice it down at night. We have a little garden hose. Go, you know, it's like the steepest thing at all. It's terrifying. I hated chairlifts, y'all. If you haven't gotten that picture, I hated chairlifts. So now all of a sudden there's this three-person chairlift, and we're going, well, we've never been on one of those. Jason goes, oh, you'll be fine. We'll be good. But I'm taking this side because I'm terrified of heights, and I need a bar to wrap around onto. And so now all of a sudden that means one of us is going to be in the middle, my brother Daniel or myself. One of us is going to be in the middle. So we start, you know, we're like rock, paper, scissoring to see who can be the middle. I mean, who can have the side that have a bar to wrap around, because, you know, we want to, like, live through the day. You know, and he ended up winning. So now all of a sudden I'm in the middle, all right? That means no bar, nothing to hang on to. And as I quickly learned, it also means that your positioning is very important when the chairlift comes. So let me go on with the story here. So we're all right there in line. I'm terrified. I'm worried about all this stuff. The previous chair goes right in front of us. Now the next chair coming along is ours. So we're pulling. We're trying to get up in place so that way we're there when the chair comes and hits you in the back of the knees. Now, I end up, this was a long stretch. I don't know why this was so long, but it was a long stretch to where you're supposed to stand to get on there. So I end up going. I'm trying to hurry because I'm trying to get there, and end up drifting over to the right a little bit, which means I was where my brother was supposed to be. So now all of a sudden that chair comes along, hits him in the knees, and I'm standing right in front of him, and it hits me in the knees, and I am now sitting on my brother's lap, literally sitting on his lap. Now at this point, the chair's, you know, like this far off of the ground. I mean, you know, just barely enough where your feet are still kind of scraping. And this brother of mine that I love so much, shared the womb for 9 months, the man that we've had so many memories and so many experiences together, do you know what he does? He pushes me off. Now, at this point, the chair is like this far off of the ground, you know, smacks me in the back of the head. I mean, skis have flown everywhere. Poles have flown everywhere. You know, whenever somebody falls, they have to shut the entire lift down. And then everybody else is all of a sudden their chairs start swinging and they're always up there going, who fell? Now, all of a sudden, you know, I'm a little bit woozy because literally the chair hits me in the back of the head and I'm face down in the snow, and it's just one of those things, you know. It was a fun experience, you know, let me tell you. So then they get me my skis and my poles, and I kind of, you know, I'm still even learning how to put on skis properly, so it takes me forever to get hooked into them. Meanwhile, everyone else is going, look at this moron that's up here on the mountain. Why, what's he doing here? So we finally get up to the top, and of course, getting off the chairlift, I fell as well, and they had to shut it all down again. You know, it's just one of those things. But here's the funny thing. You ask my brother to this day what happened. You know what he's going to say? You jumped. I say, you pushed me off the lift. He goes, no, you jumped. You jumped off of it. Brothers are going to fight, right? Brothers are going to fight. If my brother's a man of integrity, he'd be like, no, I was responsible for that. And if I was a man of integrity, I'd be like, I shouldn't have you know, I didn't go straight. That wasn't my fault. I was a beginner, right? If these brothers are people of integrity, instead of arguing and laying blame at each other, instead they're going to walk back these 250, 300 miles. They're going to be like, how do we make this right? Because that's what integrity does. Joseph tells his brothers, hey, don't fight along the way. You know why he does that? Because he knows these brothers, these 11 guys. You know what the appeal really is, what he's saying? He's saying, I don't want you to disagree with each other. What he's really saying is, be people of integrity and own up to your own mistakes. Don't start blaming each other for things that are really your fault. I think the story of Joseph is just so amazing because it captures what we go through so often. Ironically, I never thought I would say this about an Egyptian pharaoh, but I find myself wanting to be more like him than I do the brothers in this story at this point. We've seen a lot of growth in the brothers. And let me tell you, there's still quite a bit more story in the life of Joseph that we have to go. And we're going to try and pick up the pace a little bit as we go along. But it's just this incredible story of what it means when God truly impacts your life and what that looks like. As we've looked at today, integrity is what that looks like. Be people of integrity. Be people who do the right thing in the proper manner. Be people who are going to live your life in such a way that just like Pharaoh saw something in Joseph, be people that people see something in you. And for some of you, that may mean you need to go do an act of kindness for somebody this week. For some of you, that means you need to go out in the foyer and put your name on the list saying you're going to go with us in 5 weeks as we go do disaster relief at Port Arthur. Port Aransas flooded again this week with all the rains and things that are going on. And y'all, they need help. So we're going to go. We hope that you'll go with us. We hope that you'll do something good for somebody this week, that you'll do the right thing in the proper way. So let's have a word of prayer. God, thank you for how you work. Thank you for the things that you do in our lives. Thank you that you love us enough that you aren't willing to let us live like we are, but you want to make something great and something beautiful out of us. Lord, just use our lives and use us for you this week. We look forward to the stories that we're going to have of the things we did for somebody this week, the good works that we did, the ways that we let people know that God loves them and cares for them. We just pray that you'll be with us. For it's your name we pray. Amen.